Dave Woods. This is the radio show where country music gets up close and personal.
Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
On the show today, Nova Scotia's J.P. Cormier, Alberta's Don Gammey, and Saskatchewan's Mandy Ringdell. Let's get things started off with my first guest, J.P. Cormier, who's here to talk about his music career, songwriting, as well as sharing his brand new song called Hometown Battlefield. And we'll get to that song in just a bit. Welcome to the show, J.P.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it is so great to have you here, and I'll give a glimpse into some of the stuff you've achieved in your career so far. 13 solo albums since 1995, 12 East Coast Music Awards since 1991, a Juno nomination in around the year 98, also 20 times appearing on the Grand Ole Opry. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've been a busy boy.
And those are just some of the highlights. It's pretty amazing. I was also pretty amazed to read about some of the people who really endorse you and that you've worked with and had amazing things to say. Marty Stewart. Well, let's talk about Marty in a moment. Will and Jennings and Chet Atkins, both, of course, those last two have passed away. But they just said some terrific things about your musical abilities.
Yeah, Will and Chet were instrumental, no pun intended, in getting me into the U.S. legally. They wrote some pretty impressive letters of endorsement for me, and then they had also, over the years, said some kind things about me to different press and stuff, and they were special men. Waylon especially was somebody that I... he's fairly indescribable. I think probably the closest person I ever met to Waylon would have been Stompin' Tom. So, we're cut from a certain kind of cloth that you just you don't find anymore.
And I understand Stompin' Tom gave you your first steady paycheck. There's a story about that early on in your career.
Yeah, well, I moved to the U.S. when I was 15, I had to keep coming out of the country every 8 months or so because of immigration. And I, at one point, I ended up in Canada, 19 years old, broke, and was working for the CBC as a music consultant and a session musician at Studio H in Halifax. And a guy named Tom Gallant wrote this song called Hero Stompin' Tom, which was a fantastic tribute song to Connors. And I ended up being the entire band on it. He played guitar and sang, and I put everything else on it, bass and rhythm, dobro, fiddle and mandolin, and I think Carl Falkenham, one of the engineers, did the boot. And Tom heard the song in late 89 when he was secretly planning this comeback tour. And he asked Gallant if he would go out as the opening act, and Connors says, well, do you know any other musicians that might be interested in being in this band? And Gallant said, well, yeah, you should get this guy that played on the song. Actually, I think what actually happened was Connors said, complimented the band on the song. And Gallant said, well, that's just one guy. and Stomper said, well, who the hell is that? I never heard, who is that? And I ended up getting hired as the utility man in the band for the entire tour.
Wow.
And we arrived up there in the spring for 2 weeks of rehearsal before the tour started, and I was broke. And I was broke till I was 28, 29 years old, really. And I was sitting at his kitchen table and pretty well in rags, and he looked at me and said, well, you should go downtown, buy yourself clothes for this trip. And he gave me $500 in cash.
Oh, my goodness.
And I looked at the money and I started to cry. And his wife, Lena, still talks about that story. I couldn't help it. It was the most money I'd ever seen in my life. And as we had, I grew up incredibly poor. My father died when I was 8, and my mother and I were on welfare. And it was a bad, I had a hard childhood. And so when I had that $500 in my hand, I was about the richest man that ever walked the face of Ontario.
Right.
And so that was, I'd already played the Opry and a few times, but the Opry only paid $69. So it's a hard business. People don't understand how difficult this is to do this for your entire life. It's if you have any success, especially if you have any financial success, which I've had a fair bit of financial success in the last 20 years, and it's not easy. You know, you have to you really have to be ready to sacrifice everything in order to get to that point where you can actually make a living at it.
And a lot of people don't realize that. Younger people, obviously, they see music videos and they listen to the radio and so forth. And so there's definitely that glamorous quality to it. But as you said, there's definitely a lot of paying your dues and a lot of struggle along the way.
Well, you know, the whole commercial music scene is kind of a mirage. It's not, these people who achieve success through commercial means and are on television and on radio, and they're not guaranteed any future. And a matter of fact, most of them have none. They'll have a short run of success, and then they've got to tour that one big hit for the next 20 years. And like a great example of this is the fact that 2014, there was not one single platinum record issued in the United States or Canada, period. This is the first time in the history of recorded music that there wasn't a platinum album achieved in the United States. And that's a hard knock. You know, there used to be dozens of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody would sell them, there'd be 5 or 6 people, 8 people a year would sell 1 million records. This year, or last year, or I'm sorry, 2014, it was Beyonce. She sold 100,000 units, 800,000 units. She was 200,000 short of getting a platinum record, so none were awarded. Like, that's never happened. So, I mean, it's the whole business has changed, and it's been changing for about 30 years. And I know a lot of people think that it's happened only recently with the advent of the internet and all these different things. But I think the internet is a big boon for us, because it puts the power of marketing and connecting with your audience directly in the hands of the artist. And I think that's fantastic. So,
it definitely is a different music business these days, for sure. Different things artists need to do and ways to reach the listeners. We're going to get to your song, JP, Hometown Battlefield, very shortly. But let's take a moment to talk about Marty Stewart. We touched on him just off the top. I mentioned his name, but I know that you've worked with him quite a bit. What is Marty Stewart all about? What's he like?
Well, Marty is a fantastic human being. He's I met him because I replaced him in a band. Right along the time he had Hillbilly Rock, he was working with the relatives of the band that I went into the U.S. initially to work with, a bluegrass gospel band called the Sullivan Family. And it was a kind of an odd story. They were a united family at one time in a car wreck, and the subsequent lawsuits split them apart. So there was the Sullivan family, which was Enoch and Margie Sullivan, husband and wife. And then Enoch's uncle, Jerry, was the splinter group. So Jerry went out on his own with his daughter, and they were called Jerry and Tammy Sullivan. And they were fighting for years over the use of their last name. And it was quite a soap opera. And then Jerry, unfortunately, just passed away a few months ago, this summer, actually. And So I worked for both bands. I worked for Enoch, and then I stopped working for Enoch, and I noticed that Jerry needed a mandolin player and a harmony singer and all that stuff, and I had no work. And so, and plus I was really in love with his daughter, and I said she was incredibly beautiful. And so now I was a young man. I was like 22 years old, and so I went over there and auditioned and got the job, and I was filling in Marty's place because Marty had left, you know, playing with Jerry virtually full time to pursue his record career, and he kind of worked for Jerry a lot because he cited Jerry and the Sullivans as the people that got him started, which he did. He started playing with the original Sullivan family in the 70s and left them and went to Lester Flatt and played with Flatt until he married, went to Johnny Cash, and he married Cash's daughter. And then when that sort of, the marriage fell apart, he ended up back with Jerry, just trying to get his soul straight, you know? And so I ended up there in his place, and then they had just put a record out called The Joyful Noise and was nominated for a Grammy. And it was done on the American Country Music Heritage Foundation label for Emmy Lou Harris, and we began recording again, and Marty became our producer. So I ended up working with Marty in a lot of different venues. Like I did studio work with Marty. We did television. We did radio. We did. We were part of the No Hats tour that him and Travis Tritt did.
Yeah,
and when I sang great the gospel number at the end. Marty was really the doorway into Nashville for me, because through him he was taking us to all these places, and that's how we got hired. The way I met Waylon was we were hired to go sing at his 54th birthday party, because he was a registered atheist, but there was something about Jerry's music that he saw something in and wanted to know more about God. And
right.
So we went in there and sang, and that's the same day I met Chet. Chet was at the party. I met a ton of people that day. And then Nashville, that old guard, you know, those people that are now in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and so on, in the Nashville echelon, they're a family. When you met those people, they didn't forget about you after you left the room. You know, it was once you were in, well, then they just accepted you. They didn't care if you were a side man or a front man or what the hell you were. They just, if you could pick and sing, well, then that was good enough. Right.
And, JP, let's get set to turn, just for the sake of time, to Hometown Battlefield. But we got some time for you to tell me a bit about the song. It's such a moving song, and there's a message in it, and it's a very relevant song throughout Canada and the States. Let's talk about Hometown Battlefield before we share it with our listeners, JP.
Well, I wish I could say that I planned this. I would look so brilliant if I could say that I saw the plight of these people, which I did. I have. I was in Afghanistan in 2007 for 2 weeks and entertaining the NATO forces, and two of the people that were with us were killed, and we brought one of them home in the belly of the plane. The other man, they couldn't find him. They just found his camera, and I was the last thing on his roll. And it was a life-altering experience. It absolutely devastated my view of the world and my view of, you know, you see something like that, and you can no longer be complacent about anything. It just punches you in the face so hard that you can't look at anything the same way again. And I've thought a lot about that, because I was only in there for 2 weeks, and I got to sling a guitar over my shoulder. These men and women are slinging rifles.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been part of my personal makeup since 2007. And this spring I went on a momentous tour, and it was the first solo tour that I'd done in 25 years. I went out. I went all the way from New Glasgow, Nova Scotia to Vancouver, from Vancouver to Mississippi, and from Mississippi into Ontario, and then back home. It was 40 shows in about 71 days, and driving, me and the dog. And all along the way, I kept listening to the radio a lot, and I'm a news hound. So I kept hearing, I was only gone 2 months, and three soldiers committed suicide. And I kept hearing it on the radio. And I was only a few days from home when the last man took his own life. And I got home, and I was so exhausted. I was absolutely body stoned. And I was literally sitting here at about 10 o'clock at night. I just got pulled in a few hours before, and I had a new guitar that I picked up from Roger Schmidt up in Kitchener, from the Stonebridge shop and at Brickhouse Guitars, and I wanted to try it. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to pick it up and play it, because I just didn't know what else to do with myself. I was so tired, I just couldn't think anymore, and I always turn to music when I'm in distress. So I picked up the guitar, and the first thing that happened was those chords. Just I didn't play anything else, just picked it up, and then those were right under my fingers, and I went through the first six or seven chords, and all of a sudden the lyrics just started flying out as fast as I, it was so fast that I didn't have time to write them down. I just threw my phone on the table and recorded the lyrics, spoke them, and then right. I emailed that to myself, and I printed them out, and I got them organized. I was looking at this thing going, wow, this song is something special, because this isn't what I normally write, and I don't know why I would choose to, you know, I just didn't really have much of an explanation for it, and except that, you know, it's a gift from God. God gives me those things, gives writers those things, and we just hold it in. And it's a little bit scary, because what happened next took me by surprise. I have never done this before. I'm not real big on self-promotion, and I'm terrible with computers. I put my iPad up on the kitchen table, and I recorded myself singing the song for the very first time. That was the first time I'd ever hit the air. And I watched it back, and I was like, well, you know, that's not so bad, you know. So I posted it on my personal Facebook page, not my fan page. I was just going to keep it between me and the few people that I have on my personal page, and I went to bed. I was spent, and that's it. I'm going to sleep. So I finally went to bed. I got up the next morning. There's 15,000 hits on it, and I went,
wow,
this is weird. And then I thought, maybe I should try to put this on the fan page too, and so I did that, and it was hard because I'm no good at those things, and it took me hours to get it to work. Finally got it up on the fan site, and this was a Saturday morning. The following Friday, like a week after I posted it, there were 786,000 hits on the fan site. Another 40,000 on my personal page. And at that point I went, this is ridiculous. And I said, I got to go record this. So I ran over to Dave Gunning's studio, who's one of my very best friends in the world. And we cut the song, and he mixed it and mastered it. And we sent it to Toronto to my manager, Sean Russell. He had a very talented young lady whose name I can't recall right now. I'm having a brain burp. and she made a lyric video for it, and we posted it on YouTube. Well, it was only a couple of weeks, we were over 3 million hits. I'm still getting emails and messages, YouTube messages, Facebook messages, and emails from soldiers and soldiers' families all over the planet and I mean thousands of them. It's just absolutely overwhelming, and a vast majority of them are Vietnam veterans. Probably that's the greatest number, are the vets from Vietnam. And it did something in my world that I've never seen before. I have no idea how to explain it, it's just a humbling. It's like it has a life of its own, and I'm just writing it out, you know.
Beautiful story behind the song and how it got to the finished song that we're about to hear. I'm just going to let our listeners know they can head to your website, JP, at jp-cormier.com, and they can check out the lyric video there and learn more about you. There are so many of your songs, your Gordon Lightfoot tribute album. It just goes on and on. They'll learn a ton about you there. I want to thank you so much for being here, JP, and sharing your stories and your time, and we'll get set to play this song now. So thanks for being here.
Well, I really appreciate your support, and we need more men like you, men and women like you, out there doing this for Canadian artists. We can really get the job done, you know, if we have enough people like you out there working it for us.
Well, I appreciate that, JP, very much, and we'll talk to you soon. Have yourself a great night.
Okay, God bless.
This is J.P. Cormier in Hometown Battlefield on In the Country.
He got home from the service as the spring began its turn. 12 long months away. He folded up his uniform with the medals tucked inside. Started living for today, but the present could not find him, nor could his wife and kids. He was there, but he was gone. And soon his only comfort was a bottle and his gun. Something right that went so wrong. And the silence keeps on coming as the movie plays again. You can smell that yellow dust and death hanging on the wind. And we thought the war was over, but the headlines do reveal that another soldier died today on the hometown battlefield. He sits outside the courthouse with his pant legs tucked away, and no one knows his name. One wrong step there in the sand put him where he is today. One more just the same. All his memories live there in the space below his knees, back when he was whole. But that IED didn't just relieve him of his legs, it blew apart his soul. And the silence keeps on coming as the movie plays again. You can smell that yellow dust and death flying on the wind. And we thought the war was over, but the headlines do reveal that another soldier died today on the hometown battlefield. If you're wearing loafers, you ain't walked the burning sand, and you ain't never had to shoot another living man. It don't matter if we won, it don't matter if we lost, they were following their orders, no matter the cost. So I remember what they've given when I see my flag unfurled, free against the sky. And the way we seem to lose them when they get back to the world, can someone tell me why? That's the silence keeps on coming. lines do reveal that another soldier died today on the hometown battlefield. Yes, we pray the war is over, but the headlines do reveal that another soldier died today on the hometown battlefield.
And that is Nova Scotia's J.P. Cormier here on In the Country, his brand new song called Hometown Battlefield. And that is available at iTunes, so you can head there to get the song for yourself. And, of course, his website, jp-cormier.com, is where you'll find him online. Well, let's head to Alberta now and welcome my next guest, Don Gammy. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Great to have you here. And we're going to get into your new album called Drive Away, featuring the single. I love this title of your single from the album, This Beer Ain't Gonna Drink Itself. I love that.
Yeah, it sounds like a real smart alecky guy, eh?
It does. It does. The title says a lot right there. Is that one of those songs where the title just kind of came to you first as kind of almost a joke? A punchline?
Yeah, I think I actually heard it. Somebody say something similar to that on TV on some show, and I kind of rang a little bit true with me, so I thought, well, that'd be a cool idea for a fun little song.
It's a fun song. Now, I understand, Don, that you got into country music over the last few years, but when we listen to your voice, I hear country in it, so your vocals are definitely suited for country music.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just got into really trying to play and sing country music in the last 5 or 6 years, and it kind of just came about as I started playing more for people. You find out that you got to be able to play a variety of things, so I had to add some country to my repertoire, and I just found that it kind of suited me real nice, so I started getting into it a lot more.
And it's quite interesting how different artists begin their careers, how they get into the studio for the first time. You were performing at some open mic sessions, and somebody saw you perform, and that's what led to hitting into the studio for the very first time.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I played mostly at kind of private family and friends functions and stuff, and everybody was always telling me, well, you should go out and play somewhere and let some people hear you and see what they think and stuff. So I finally got up the nerve to go out to a open mic over in St. Albert at LB's Pub. It's run by a fellow named Daryl Barr. And so I went in there and played a couple songs for those guys, and the response was really, really good. And they asked me to play some more songs, so I did. And then I went in the next week, and after that I was approached by one of the players that plays there, Lawrence Pugh, who's my producer now. And he wondered if I'd be interested in doing vocals for a couple songs he had written. And then we ended up in the studio.
Pretty amazing to think that it started from those open mic sessions. And was songwriting something, Don, that you did way back or something you got into more recently?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was one of those guys that I kind of dabbled in songwriting, and I had, you know, a lot of stuff that I kind of started and never finished. And, you know, doing this stuff with Lawrence in the studio kind of inspired me to get back at doing that, and ended up writing a couple songs that are on this album now. So I'm looking forward to writing more songs now that the process is getting going.
Yeah. There's a certain, you know, as a lot of writers know, and even music fans know, there's a certain, almost a formula, a science to songwriting in one sense. There's the craft, and then, of course, there's the place where those feelings come from. You know, a ballad you've got on your album, I believe you wrote it called Drive Away, which is also the name of the album. Those songs come from a real heartfelt place.
Yeah, I mean, that particular song, and I mean, that's why I decided to call the album Drive Away, because it's really, really the first song that I ever, you know, kind of finished and was quite proud of, so I thought that would be a fitting title for that CD. But that song itself, you know, it kind of just developed. When I sit down and kind of look at writing a song, I usually try and come up with parts first, and then I kind of sing some lyrics along with it and see what might go good with it. But that song kind of developed from a more from the chorus, and I kind of was just, it's basically about really any kind of addiction that has a hold of you. And it's, you know, it's not particularly about something that happened in my life, but, you know, I have seen some things happen with other people that, you know, you kind of get in a frame of mind, well, I wonder what it really feels like to be caught up in that. Mm-hmm. And I tried mm-hmm. to kind of write it from that perspective.
Well, that's the thing about songwriting. It doesn't always have to be something that happens to the writer personally. It can be something they've observed from a family member or a friend, and they can tell the story from that perspective of what they've seen that person go through.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I mean, you know, not all people in their lives have experienced all of the, you know, hardships and things that a lot of people do write about in their life. But, you know, it's about being creative and coming up with a story, regardless if it's about yourself or not, right?
Yeah, exactly. And JP and I were talking actually before we went on the air about the formula of songwriting. And he's an artist, a singer-songwriter, who needs to feel something and be inspired to get to that point. He doesn't sit down to write and try to finish something, you know, over a certain span of time. But that's a big thing in Nashville, right? And it's certainly a good thing as well that people can sit down and accomplish something, say, within 3 hours and actually know enough about the formula of a song to create one that way.
Yeah, and it's, you know, that particular skill of, you know, going and getting into a room with a bunch of people and deciding that this is what we're going to do for the next 3 hours, that's, you know, that's something that I think I'm going to have to get better at, because for me now, you know, songs kind of pop into my head, and, you know, I don't always feel like writing a song. So sometimes it's a matter of, if you're inspired at the time, sometimes the words just flow out of you. Sometimes you got to leave it a few days, right?
And come back, yeah, and just give it that time to breathe and maybe sink in a little deeper, for sure. Some of the influences that you've mentioned, Jamie Johnson, Eric Church, The Tragically Hip, on the countryside with Jamie and Eric, I mean, very traditional sounding, especially Jamie. Eric is too. Some of his stuff gets a little rockier, his last album, but he's got a new song out called Talladega, which is such a great story song.
Yeah, I love that song too. Yeah, I mean, Eric Church, I'm the biggest fan of him. But Jamie Johnson, I mean, I just love his voice. I mean, he can make, he could make the alphabet sound interesting, you know?
Exactly. Definitely.
And I mean, I seem to be attracted to the songwriters, right? The singer-songwriters like Eric Church and Jamie Johnson. Guys like Randy Houser too, you know, those kind of guys.
Love Randy Houser. And Jamie Johnson, his big song that was commercially successful was In Color, which maybe 5 or 6 years ago, something like that, which was such a great song, and it managed to, of course, get on the charts, and it was a very traditional song, but people loved it.
Yeah, and I mean, funny you mention that, because that's one of the songs that I sang at the open mic that people were interested in.
Yeah, that's such a great song. The hook, talking about black and white pictures, and then you should have seen it in color. And I mean, it's just such a wonderful song. I hadn't thought about it till just now talking to you. I loved the song at the time, but hadn't heard it in a while. And I have to go back and listen to that one, because that's one of my favorites. Have you done any trips, Don, to Nashville yet? Have you experienced Music City?
I have never been to Nashville. I would love to go sometime. Maybe we'll get it in next year.
Yeah, that would be great, because so many artists who go there, you know, they get so inspired by just being in that area, whether they go to the Opry or the Ryman or just all the different music venues there. They just seem to leave there with a renewed passion for music.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, as a singer-songwriter, everybody that you meet that has been there seems to have the advice for you that you need to go there.
yeah, exactly. Definitely. They say to get down there, you know, at least once or try to make it a regular trip and write down there. Because there's so many Canadians who either go down to visit and write or that are now living down there. and as well. So there's a great community. But I wanted to ask you, Don, about performing. When you're performing on stage, is that something you're pretty comfortable at now, getting up in front of a crowd and singing your songs?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable now. I mean, it's, I don't think, you know, you hear a lot of people that have been doing it for a number of years say that they're still nervous before they do a show. Like, I still get nervous, but I mean, you know, after you do the first one or two songs, it becomes just like anything else, right? You're used to doing it. And I mean, I admittedly, I need a lot more experience doing that, but I'm having a lot of fun doing it so far, so.
And do you like to tell stories between songs? There are some artists who get up and sort of go from song to song, maybe with a little bit of chat in between, and others like to, you know, tell big stories. Do you like to tell stories on stage?
I'm not a huge storyteller, no. I mean, I'll throw a couple things in here and there, but I'm not going to be the guy that goes off on a story for 10 minutes, you know?
Right. People are there to hear the music, so that's a good way to approach
that's
it.
That's right.
Lauren Tutte is the one responsible for all the guests on the show today, for booking them. So we had JP, we've got Mandy Ringdahl on after you. Tell me about working with Lauren, because I've known her for quite a while now, and she is so great at getting artists' songs out at radio and getting their name heard as well.
Yeah, I mean, she is great, and she's basically been the one that's helping us get this song out to radio, and you know, she sends us the updates every week and lets us know what's going on, and she's very encouraging about the music that you're doing, and you know, if she believes in it, she lets you know, and you know, she works hard to get it out there for you.
Well, let's turn to the song that she is currently promoting at radio for you. We talked about it earlier, the great title, This Beer Ain't Gonna Drink Itself. This is a great country song, a honky-tonk song. Tell us about the song, Don, before we play it.
Well, that song, we needed one more song to put on the album, so, and we wanted to make something that was kind of catchy that the radio might be interested in, and so I went home and kind of, you know, thought about some ideas I had and remembered that I had heard that line somewhere before and started kind of formulating something around it, and it's
right.
You know, it's really just a kind of playful you know, kind of jab at the wives of the world that have these big lists for their husbands, things that they need to do, and
that's right.
We all know how we love those lists, and you know, basically it's just making it sound like you've got a lot of things to do other than that list, but you'll get to it
that's
at some
right.
point. And really, the thing, other things you have to do aren't really that important. But, I mean, they're important to us guys, right?
That's right, exactly. Exactly, and like you said, it's a fun song because we have a lot of deep songs, and we heard one at the beginning of the show, which is important. But it's great to have a song like this, too, that's just a fun song. That's what it's there for, right? Just for us to kind of forget our worries, troubles, and just enjoy it.
You bet. That's what it's all about.
Well, Don, I want to thank you so much for being here, and I'll let our listeners know they can head to dongammy.com. And is this song at, or actually your whole album, I should say, the album Drive Away, is available at iTunes, so people can head there and check it out.
Yep.
Don, thanks so much for being on the show.
Okay, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Let's hear from him now. This is Don Gammy, his brand new song, This Beer Ain't Gonna Drink Itself, on In the Country.
gonna drink itself. And I know the man to do it. I'm burning daylight and I haven't much time, so I'd better get right to it. The boys are stopping by to give me a hand. Don't worry, honey, we got a plan.
And that is brand new music from Alberta's Don Gammy. This beer ain't going to drink itself here on In the Country. His website, once again, is dongammy.com. Well, it's time to head to Saskatchewan now to speak to Mandy Ringdahl. And welcome to the show, Mandy.
Hello.
Great to have
Thanks
you here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me.
Well, my pleasure. It's so awesome to talk to you. I've enjoyed getting to know your music and also checking out a couple of your videos, including Alive at 25, which is quite a powerful and a very serious and heartfelt song.
Yeah, that getting to make that video was quite an opportunity for me. It was kind of my first big professional thing that I've done, and just feel really lucky that I've been able to do that. And I hope to make another one soon, but nothing in the works quite yet, but we'll see what comes in the new year.
Down the road, exactly. That's great. Well, people can check that out on YouTube or at mandyringdahl.com, your website, of course. Now, you recorded your first album not too long ago. Back in 2012 is when you started recording it, and it came out, I believe, in 2013. What led you to, and I know there's quite a story there, but what can you tell us what led you to that first album?
Well, I just taught myself to play guitar 3 years ago, and I started writing songs. And that first recording experience was with a friend of the family. He kind of came to me and said, you know, you should record those. And he hooked me up with his pal, and we laid down a couple of tracks. And then at that same time, I was awarded a Touchdown for Dreams recipient in it's a Saskatchewan Rough Riders program for women with cancer. And one of the dreams, the dream that they helped make come true for me was to record my music. So at that same time, I also went into a studio in Regina and laid down a few tracks on another album, which is what eventually got released on iTunes as my first sort of commercially available album. So two albums sort of started at the same time, and then the EP was kind of the first one that went out to the world. So that's kind of how I started in recording.
Pretty amazing. And I know that, in fact, your first song before the last few years, you wrote a song at age 13. And it was all about your Wrangler jeans. I mean, at age 13, what else can we write about?
I wrote about, looking back, I'm sure I was writing about boys and whatever else. But, yeah, my jeans. I don't know. I guess I was right in this cowgirl phase. And, you know, I had a horse and so the jeans, that was just what was on my brain at that time.
Exactly.
I wish I could find that notebook. I think I might know where it is, but
It's always great to look back at our first songs, right, and see how far we've come, and also to see, I guess, the innocence of those first songs, because we weren't trying to necessarily write a hit song. We're just writing a song that came to us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, back in those days, I was just playing around with things. I didn't actually have an instrument to put music to these things, so I sort of wrote songs. And then as I got older, I was writing a lot of poetry and things like that. And then it wasn't until just 3 years ago when I picked up the guitar that I was actually able to make music with the words that were coming out of me. So that was quite liberating for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great ability to develop, right, to have the melodies come to you and be able to use your guitar to get them out. That must have been great to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of sort of a lifelong desire, and it just took me until I was a bit older to have the determination and sort of the courage to just kind of go forward and let the stuff come out. And it did, and it keeps coming out, so I'm really enjoying it. Yeah,
it does take a lot of courage, right? If you start when you're young, it's all you know. If you get up and perform, but if you're doing it a bit later on, you're going to be sharing stuff with people who know you, and you're probably uncomfortable at first because they haven't seen you in that situation.
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of nerves in the first few times singing in front of people and sharing my songs, but I've gotten a lot more comfortable with it, of course, now, and I just look so forward to every opportunity that I have to share the songs, and just did my first co-write. The song that's now out at radio was my first co-write, and I'm looking forward to writing a bit more with David Leask again, and it's just been quite a ride and a good journey.
Great, David Leask. I know him, and he's such a great artist. That's Ontario's David Leask, the Scottish singer-songwriter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's amazing. I met him at the CCMAs a couple of years ago, and we hooked up over Skype this winter or this spring, I guess, and we wrote "Love Knows What to Do," and we're hoping. Actually, we're going to get together again on Thursday this week to work on a few other things. So, yeah.
Oh, terrific. Well, pass on a hello from me. I saw him, most recently at the Country Music Association of Ontario had a two-day event with all kinds of seminars and different topics. And the Saturday night of it was a showcase, and David was one of the artists who got to perform three of his songs. And it was so good. He was just, he's such a powerful singer. It was great to watch.
Oh, I know. I just love listening to him.
Yeah,
he's very good. Very good.
That's so great. So we're going to get to Love Knows What to Do, your co-write with David, in just a little bit. Let's talk about some of your influences, Mandy. Who are the artists who excited you and still do about writing and making music?
Well, most recently, I've been listening a lot to Holly Williams. I just love her style and her honesty and her lyrics and just her tone and how she just really emotes into her songs. So I really admire her work. And over the last couple of years, I've listened a lot to Kacey Musgraves and those sorts of artists. I sort of veer towards the roots artists, and the Pistolanis, that kind of a sound.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a Miranda Lambert fan too. I try to kind of, and I love Patti Griffin. She's a songwriter and just amazing stuff that I've heard from her. And so I kind of veer towards those sort of artists when I'm looking for inspiration. I get it from anywhere, really. but those are
great choices. I love all of the ones you mentioned. Holly Williams is just terrific. Her song Highway, like you said, she really emotes well and just puts the emotion in. And Miranda Lambert, I'm thinking of a song. I don't know if you've covered this one or not, but it comes up on the show a lot because it's just, I guess it's her classic song, which is The House That Built Me, which is, it's like a modern-day classic. Have you ever performed that one, Mandy?
I haven't performed it in public, but I've sang it just, when I'm jamming myself, just playing around with stuff. I have done that one. I think I pretty much probably sang all of her songs at some point, whether it's just me in a room or whatever, but I kind of try to play a variety of artists and try to kind of work my or practice different genres and this and that just to try to shape my voice or work my voice and just kind of learn what my voice and my style is going to be. Just, you know, mm-hmm. I'm so new at it still, really.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
That does take a while, mm-hmm. doesn't it, to to understand what your style is and just how to be, I guess, find your voice, find your sound.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I'm learning that more as I record more and work with producers, and they kind of and push me to try different things. And definitely writing with David, he pushed me to try different things vocally, different like doing the falsetto and this and that. And I probably wouldn't have had the guts to do it if he wasn't there pushing me to try. So
right.
It's an ongoing learning experience, and I only hope to get better. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it's one of those things, music, that you get better at as you go along. And your voice sounds amazing. We're going to hear that in just a moment. People will hear for themselves. What's some great advice you've had, Mandy, in your career so far from either maybe somebody like Lauren or a fellow musician, somebody who's given you something that you've been able to sort of apply to your journey?
I think probably the most important thing is people telling you just to be genuine, be you, don't try to be something you're not. You can't fake it. An audience will see through you immediately. So if you're not mm-hmm. believing in what you're putting out there, it's just the audience doesn't relate to it as much. And it's, for me, it's not as enjoyable to perform it if I don't believe what I'm singing or the message I'm trying to get across in a song, or if I'm not genuinely enjoying what I'm doing, the audience isn't going to either. So I think just that message of being true to who you are as an artist and not trying to be someone else or somebody that they expect you to be, just being the best you, basically, is kind of the best advice I've heard.
That makes a lot of sense, because you can only pretend to be something you're not for a while. People can usually tell on stage mm-hmm. that you're not that person, and you're not going to feel comfortable if you're getting up there having to put on this persona that you've got to really work at. So just being yourself is great advice.
Yeah. Well, I try to.
Mandy. Yeah, sometimes it's easier some days than others, right? Turn to your song now, and we'll talk about Lauren for a moment, because I asked Don about her as well before we get to Love mm-hmm. Knows What to Do. Lauren, of course, works your song at radio, gets your name out there, you know, just does so many important things with your career, getting you out there and your name known, which is so important.
Yeah.
What is it like working with Lauren?
Oh, she's awesome. I met her this fall at the CCMAs in Edmonton, and when I decided to put the single to radio, I thought, you know, just she's so personable, and she's just got this air about her that she's confident, and I thought, yeah, I think I got to go with Lauren. Like, she's just I just trust in her abilities, and she's just so professional and really goes out there and gets the job done. So I'm pretty excited to be working with her on this song. So, yeah, she's great.
Yeah, she's awesome. Let's talk about the song now, Love Knows What to Do. You mentioned you wrote it with David Leask. And did the title come first for you guys, or how did this song get started?
Well, I approached David to write, and we had our Skype, and he said, so what do you want to write about? And I said, oh, let's write about forgiveness and not holding on to grudges. And he kind of laughed, and he said, well, that's a pretty light topic to start off our first co-writing session. So we kind of played with a few, just sort of the different messages that we wanted to incorporate into the song, and different sort of imagery. And so the song sort of has a physical flow to it almost. And he came up with a couple of lines that he had in his mind, and one was Love Knows What to Do. And so he thought, I've had this line in my head, and we're talking about forgiveness. And so the song kind of just became sort of a story about, you know, people not sort of disagreeing, and how you come to a conclusion, and basically you rely on love to kind of lead you down the right path. So Love Knows What to Do is what we decided to go with for the title of the song.
It's a beautiful song, and let's let our listeners hear that now. This is Saskatchewan's Mandy Ringdahl, and Love Knows What to Do, out in the country.
Can't stop yourself thinking when your anchor's all caught up inside, and it's whispering, you know you're right. Maybe it's too hard to see, and the water's all cloudy, and it's hiding the truth between.
What a beautiful song from Mandy Ringdahl, Saskatchewan's own, and that is called Love Knows What to Do. Thanks so much for being here, Mandy.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you asking me onto the show.
Well, my pleasure. Enjoyed the song. Enjoyed speaking with you. I want to send a big thank you to all my other guests on the show. We opened things up with J.P. Cormier from Nova Scotia and his great song, Hometown Battlefield. And then, of course, we spoke with Don Gammy. His album is called Drive Away. And that song of his, The Honky Tonker, This Beer Ain't Gonna Drink Itself. We'll wrap things up by giving a big shout-out to Lauren Tutty. And thanks for all your support of the show, Lauren, and sending so many great guests my way. I'm Dave Woods, and that'll wrap up this edition of In the Country.